Thanks for listening to Pod of Jake. I'm Jake. You can reach me anytime by emailing jake@blogofjake.com. I'm fortunate to have some sponsors supporting the show whose products I genuinely love and recommend. I'll start with a word on those so the rest of the episode will have no interruptions. I hope you enjoy. This episode is brought to you by Aura. That's O-U-R-A. The Aura Ring, from my perspective, is the single best wearable on the market. I use it to measure my sleep, activity, and readiness on a daily basis. I bought my Aura Ring several months ago before talking with the company's CEO on the podcast. I haven't taken it off since. I believe what gets measured gets managed. So if you care at all about your health, which you should, you have to measure your sleep in order to manage it. Aura measures much more than just my time in bed. It tracks my REM sleep versus deep sleep, my resting heart rate and heart rate variability, my temperature, my activity, and much, much more. For $299, you can get your own Aura Ring on AuraRing.com. That's O-U-R-A-R-I-N-G.com. AuraRing.com. This episode is brought to you by Levels. Levels uses continuous glucose monitoring to track your blood sugar in real time. It allows me to see the impact that everything I do has on my metabolic health so that I can optimize my diet and exercise accordingly. Wearing the Levels patch, I feel like I'm living in the future. There's this moment when you raise your phone to the back of your arm, it vibrates and shows your glucose level right on the screen. It's this instantaneous look inside yourself, an in-the-moment snapshot of what's going on inside your body. And while it's only showing one simple measurement for now, it's enough for me to see the future. And that's exciting. It's exciting because I believe that we can live meaningfully longer and healthier lives than we do today, and I believe technologies like Levels will help us to get there. Levels is currently running an exclusive beta program with a waitlist of over 100,000 people, but you can skip the line and join Levels today by using my link in the show notes, levels.link/Jake. Again, that's levels.link/Jake. Okay, let's get into it. Thank you, Will, for coming on and joining me on the podcast today. It's great to have you on. I've been looking forward to the conversation. I've been playing around with this app called Domus, which you built. It's on the protocol called Noster. All this stuff is a bit new and might sound foreign to a lot of people. Maybe you've heard a little bit about it and want to learn more. If that's the case, this is a great episode for you. But anyway, I've been looking forward to talking to you about this. You built the app Domus, and it's going super well. I think, as far as I know, it's like the most popular on the protocol to date. I'm having trouble, you know, people banging down the gates to get in. I think you guys are going from test flight to app store pretty soon. So definitely want to talk about that and the protocol at large. But before we get into all that, it would be great just to hear sort of your story. And so your name's Will, you're JB55, basically on all the social media and, you know, Twitter and Domus and all the like. Great to hear just sort of how you got to where you are and what you're doing today and, you know, some of the decisions you made along the way.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been pretty crazy. This app just kind of blew up. I've just kind of been tinkering on it for the past 6 months or so. It was my attempt at building the best possible example of what this protocol could do. And I'm sure we'll get into what the protocol is and how it works. But, you know, my background, I just love playing with technology. I've always been a huge computer nerd since I was a kid. Fell in love with Bitcoin 2010. And, you know, again, it's one of those protocols that feel like it could change the world. And I just wanted to be involved. So anytime I'm able to, like, apply my skills to kind of, you know, use protocols to kind of change the world, like, I'm there. I want to be there. So I feel like money was a big one. And I think the next big one might be free speech online, just because it's kind of becoming not as fun. It's kind of more corporatized internet these days. So some of my goals is just kind of bring it back to what the internet used to be, right, in the IRC days and kind of just people talking to each other. So this is what I see as Nostra. Is just it's very nostalgic for the people who were on the internet in the early days, and I want to kind of bring that back. I feel like we kind of lost that. So
very cool. So maybe actually be interesting to hear a little bit about, like, your experience on the internet in the early days and what elements of this remind you of that. I know, like, you know, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about Jack's involvement with Nostra. He donated some money and things like this, but you know, he was commenting, basically reminded him of early Twitter, which was, you know, over a decade ago now. How does it, you know, I wasn't really honestly on the internet that long ago. So I'm curious, like, what aspects of it do you miss? what aspects is this kind of bringing back? How does it sort of try to reemerge the beauty of the early internet for you?
Yeah, I was born in 1988, so I kind of just would just start to, when I was a teen, I was just starting to get on the internet. It's just when things started to take off. And but the early internet, like right when the first website started to come out, it was there wasn't like any huge players. Like maybe the biggest one was like Gmail that just came out or something, but there wasn't much of a corporatized web. It was just kind of like people just putting stuff online and like these like crazy GeoCities websites and like Tripod and people just like uploading their their tutorial on how to beat GoldenEye 007 or something, right? So it was just kind of like much more organic and much more human, much more natural. And I feel like as time like kind of progressed since like early 2000s and into the like even just in 2020 or the current year 2023, it just became progressively more controlled by like advertisement and corporations. And even a lot of the stuff you Google, it's just like it's heavily filtered based off of like what you're going to most maximally buy or whatever, right? So in some sense, I do feel like we've lost what it was like on the early internet when it was just more organic and more natural and more just like human beings interacting with each other. So I feel like Nostra, and yeah, going back to what you said with like when Jack announced that he sent this tweet out, which was, oh yeah, this reminds me. So this protocol reminds me of Twitter. When it's at 5,000 users, but better. And then right when he tweeted that, my servers went down. Well, we didn't have that many beefy relays at the time. We actually found a lot of performance issues in our relays. But that was the biggest like setting off point when when he said that. So yeah, so I feel like Nostra kind of brings back a lot of like the early like nostalgia of the early internet. And I want to keep that going. I want it to be like this fun thing that's controlled by people and not like corporations who are just trying to sell stuff. So.
Yeah, very cool. I remember the James Bond GoldenEye, but I was a few years after you, so I missed some of the early stuff. And frankly, I didn't even really appreciate like sort of the power of the internet until like really late. I don't know if it's why like necessarily my surroundings or whatnot people I was associated with, but it wasn't until actually, I mean, not that it was necessarily related, but once I started like getting into Bitcoin and things, like I joined Twitter. All of this was like pretty late. I mean, I was obviously aware of Twitter and had heard of Bitcoin and things like this, but wasn't really early to the game. And once I did, I was like, and started a podcast and all this. I was just, you start to really realize like the leverage of the internet, and you can meet amazing people from all around the world. It's just a very cool situation that I sort of, for whatever reason, was not really a part of growing up. So it's been really cool. And obviously, we want to talk about Nostra. I'm learning in real time how to pronounce that. You see it on the app and everything, but thought it was Noster until right about now.
Yeah, I mean, well, I say Nostra. I think I'm the minority of that. A lot of people say Noster. A lot of people say some people say Nostr. I don't know. I don't know what it is, to be honest.
Yeah, when you have to when you have to read it and you don't hear it too often, we need more podcasts about it, and then it'll sort of like there'll be a consensus on how you say these things. But anyway, I want to sort of set the stage a little bit more, go back to you said 2010 Bitcoin. Is that was it, were you involved? Like you saw it back then and were sort of engaged back then, or you sort of first heard of it early days and took a while to get on board to talk a little bit about like sort of discovery of Bitcoin and everything like that?
Yeah, I got in. I just joined the IRC channel. Actually, I think I saw it on Hacker News. Someone posted about this like e-currency or whatever. I'm like, okay, whatever. This seems interesting. So I downloaded it, played with it, joined the IRC channel. People were like selling Bitcoin for like $1 on the IRC channel back then. So I just like, I bought a couple of them, and it was just like just playing with it really. And then so it's always been in the background, and I've always tried to use it for things. So for instance, in 2013, I was working for a company called Monster Cat, and we sold our albums with Bitcoin, which was like one of the first times that's ever happened, I think. So I started to see the value, like, wow, I didn't have to interface with the legacy system, because right at the time we were using PayPal to like pay out our artists, and it was just such a pain in the ass. So I was experimenting with paying out our artists in Bitcoin. It was with like one big giant Bitcoin transaction that like pays out 600 people. And I realized at the time it was like, oh, that was cheaper than actually doing a PayPal payouts. So yeah, I loved tinkering it and like applying it to like real world use cases. Because at the time it was just a toy. Not many people were like using it for real things. So it was always interesting to see how can we actually apply this in real life. So.
And how about like as it's developed over the years? Obviously, everyone's heard of it now. It's and sort of established. There's a whole another thing of like crypto, and people are, there now there's tribalism sort of between people who are like Bitcoin only and people who are not. What do you make of the whole evolution, and sort of how has your perspective on the whole thing developed alongside that?
Yeah, so I went through that whole like the ICO craze, and I saw like all the people like scamming people and making lots of money, and a lot of people getting burned. And I actually didn't like that. I wanted it's not nice to see people invest all their money and like lose it on like these like token scams. So I quit very quickly, became someone who was very much against altcoins, and just try to keep something that's more pure and not controlled by a small group of people. So that's the way that I see a lot of these other coins is, the people just trying to make money and people just trying to take advantage of people. So that was just my perspective just going through this whole thing. So that's why I've always been very pro kind of Bitcoin only, just because I just feel it has the most decentralized network. And I'm like, it's, and we can start building like an internet of money on top of it using the Lightning Network. So in about 2016 or 2017, I decided to quit my job and work on the Lightning Network. So I was one of the first, I think, like five nodes on the network, and I worked on Sea Lightning and things like that. So I saw the power of the protocol in terms of like, wow, we can actually now do real time instant settlement, point to point anywhere on the internet. And like, so I'm like, hey, how can I integrate this into more things? So I that's why like once I started building this Nostra project, it was like, well, why not just put Lightning into Nostra? Because it makes a lot of sense. And I'm just, that's probably one of the biggest features in this app that I'm building, is being able to send people Lightning back and forth over a social network. And it's uncensorable speech and it's uncensorable money. So it's a very powerful combo.
Right. So let's take a couple steps back here just for the people who have no idea what's going on. However you sort of best think to introduce it, maybe like as if you're introducing it to like a middle schooler or something like that, or a high school or someone, or like
Sure.
my grandmother or whatever it is, in like as simple of terms possible, because it gets very technical very quickly. How do you describe Nostra, the protocol, and then what you're building, Domus, the app? And if it makes sense to sort of go really more slowly, one step at a time, we can just start with the protocol and then get to your app later.
Yeah, maybe we'll just start with like motivation, because a lot of the time it's like, why are we doing this stuff? Like, why are we doing these crazy things with protocols? What's a protocol? I always like to start like, what is a protocol? So even my partner like always gives me shit. She's like, you keep saying protocols. Like, what do you actually mean by when you say protocol? So when I say protocol, it's all it is a language for two computers that they have a shared common language that they can talk to each other. So imagine in the world where, I'm talking to someone, just I don't speak their language. It's really hard for me to actually like do things with that, like in terms of like coordinate, tasks and stuff. I have to, it's very hard if, unless you have a common language to kind of coordinate things. So that's all a protocol is to a computer. It's just a language that they can use to talk to each other. And then once you have that language, then programs from one side of the world to the other side of the world, and computers, they can actually start to do things automatically and in interesting ways. So one common example is your browser. So your browser has a suite of protocols. So it knows when it talks to a server, it pulls down a web page, and then there's protocols that say, hey, this is how you render the web page and whatnot. So protocols are everywhere. It's kind of underlies a lot of our internet technology. So just starting with that, so just to know what a protocol is, Nostra is an attempt to build a protocol for social media. So why would we want to do this? So there's a big issue on the internet right now, where a lot of the ways that we interact and a lot of ways that we talk to each other, we have to go through these centrally controlled, corporations and companies that have unilateral ability to like take you off the network and then completely, deplatform you and things like that. So there's been attempts to, and so that's a huge issue. We don't, if we're in a free society, we want to be able to interact with each other and speak freely with each other, and send our and ideas out onto the network. But if you have one central party controlling that, it makes it really hard to, what ends up happening is that people self-censor and they actually stop saying the things they want to say because they're worried of getting banned. So that's a concern. So anyway, so Nostra is this attempt to like, hey, how can we rebuild the existing systems that are centrally controlled so that they can be the so that not one party can control what people are allowed to say. So there's been multiple attempts at this. There's Mastodon, there's one protocol, ActivityPub, but Nostra is like this other attempt at building something that has better properties than these other protocols, but which we can get into. So
So I don't want to go too far off track here, but it's an interesting point I think you brought up, which is like, so obviously censorship is sort of a widely discussed issue, probably more so now than it was even just a few years ago. Like Bitcoin and it's basically like one of the big value adds of like people are all about like decentralized, decentralized, decentralized. But the thing to me, decentralization is basically, and feel free to disagree here, but it's like pretty much a means to an end, and there can be different ends like to which it's a means, but one of those is censorship resistance. And so In the case of social media, if you're, Donald Trump, you just got banned overnight on like all of the different ways that you reached everyone in the world who follows your tweets and your messages and whatever it might be. If it's, in the case of money, you had the example earlier, or I guess last year or some point, maybe, I don't know, maybe a year ago or something like that, where the truckers in Canada who were protesting had like their bank accounts frozen. And basically it's what you're talking about. It's whenever there's centralized control of something really important, whether it's a social media website or, the financial system, there's inherent risk to that, like, small group of people or individual who maintains that control does something that you basically don't agree with. And so, that's sort of one separate thing. But the other thing you mentioned was like, people start self-censoring. And I wonder, the issue of having people able to share what they want is different from like whether they actually do. And I wonder how much of the self-censorship comes from the possibility that you say the wrong thing and you get censored versus sort of the public pressures of like, this is just going out and being seen by so many people that I can't be the same person that I am in a group of six people that are my friends. And so I need to like self-censor a little bit in that way too. And so I'm wondering sort of, if you take away the big controlling censorship, to what degree do people speak more freely, and to what degree does that social dynamic still lead to sort of this, self-censorship that we see on the internet where people aren't really being themselves in some way?
Yeah, there's definitely multiple forms of self-censorship, like you mentioned. What you mentioned is probably the bigger one, which is, social norms. You don't want to say things just like and ostracize yourself from the group. But when I specifically mentioned the one about, depending on, there's another form, which is like when you're on a platform and now you have to be worried about like the terms of service and things like that. I mentioned this because, there's this other solution to, the centralization on social media problem, which has been ActivityPub, and this is this other protocol. I was actually on this protocol for about a couple of years, and I realized the biggest issue is I was self-censoring myself because there's actually much fewer admins. So on Twitter, you have you have Elon, maybe their trust and safety team, and they make decisions on who's allowed to speak, or if you say the wrong thing, they'll kick you off. But in these other protocols, there's usually just small communities of people, and if you have to follow what that small group set is, that is appropriate speech for that small group. So I noticed when I was joining a small instance about it was like Mastodon, the social, even if I just said Bitcoin, I would get banned. So I was noticing I was censoring myself in those smaller communities. So I'm like, all of these are in some sense are very similar. This idea of I want to be able to be comfortable to say what I want to say, and I don't want anyone to have any control over me in terms of what I'm allowed to say. I should be able to say whatever I'm allowed to say. So that's why I started working on Nostra, which is like, I want something where I can actually build my social graph and maintain it throughout time and not worry that, whether it's a small instance on Mastodon or like a large centralized party, I don't want them to like kind of make me self-censor myself in some sense.
Right. And so people aren't, I think that's like a useful way to look at it, and to describe it. So to take it like sort of a step further, people are used to interacting with like apps, and we're talking about like protocols, and it can be difficult to understand how Nostra actually solves this problem that we're talking about here, where people don't feel the need to self-censor to, please, or rather like not offend the few admins in control, or the team at Twitter or whatever it might be. And I think a part of that is, in this case, due to the fact that like people can choose to participate in different apps, and there's the underlying protocol, which sort of has no opinion, no admins, things like this. And then the apps, you can sort of choose to move between them. But how does that actually, like, what's the best way to describe that to, someone like your partner who you're saying, like, ask you like, what's a protocol? Like, how do you, in the most simplest terms possible, how do you describe how that sort of solves this problem that we're talking about?
Yeah, so one possible way to describe it would be, another example of a protocol is like the email protocol. So everyone's very familiar with this protocol. There's many different clients on this protocol. So you can use your Outlook, you can use your Gmail, but the reason why they can all interoperate is because that underlying protocol or the underlying language that computers use to talk to each other. So one big issue with email though is if you want to, so usually the service provider will just host all of your email, right? So If you get banned from that provider, well, you might lose access to all your email. Maybe if you're lucky, you're able to sync it down to your computer and sync it somewhere else. But in reality, like, you just kind of lose access to all your data. Where Nostra, it takes a different approach. So instead of only just sending the notes, sending the emails to like one server, or having storing it all in one central server, whenever you do a tweet or whenever you do a post, it actually sends it to like N servers or like 10 servers. And so this kind of gives you a lot of interesting properties. So it gives you censorship resistance. So not any one individual, one of those servers they could ban you. One of those servers could ban you, but it doesn't matter because you have 9 other copies on other relays, they're called. So what basically how it works is when you spin up this client, this Nostra client, you'll just connect to those 10 relays. Everyone else that you know can connect to those 10 relays. And then, you know, your client will just fetch notes from all those relays at the same time. So if one of those relays ban you, it doesn't matter because you can pull it from the 9 others, and you can always add and remove relays. You can run your own relay, so you can back up your own speech on your own node. So it's very similar to, so in some sense, if you think about if you're using a Twitter app, it's just a client that has one relay. It's their server. Whereas a Nostra app is like, it's your client now talks to 10 servers and not. So it's a very simple idea, but it gives you a lot of interesting properties.
So would the censorship, would that occur, or the banning or whatever you might want to call it, would that occur at like the relay level or like the app level or both?
Yeah. So ideally clients will not make any moderation decisions for you. Like the ideal client is just one that connects to relays and receives and sends and receives messages, and it also would give you ability to filter things you don't want to see, block people you don't want to see. But in terms of, you could in theory build a client that just like blocks certain people, but no one would use that client because that's dumb. So yeah, I think the most realistic scenario for censorship is if like a relay is removing illegal content, which is what they probably should be doing anyway, and you know, or if someone's spamming their server, they might want to block that person. But yeah, it's much harder to kind of like censor people in this protocol just because not one person is in control of like the one relay that everyone connects to. So,
right. And is there any risk, especially early on while things are still growing, of like, you know, the various relays, like, you know, being in communication with each other and deciding on certain things, like you said, sort of like with the, I forget what the name of the app was that you had used previously, that you said sort of you used it for a couple of years and then you didn't really like it so much because there was like a small team of admin. Is there any risk early on while there's not that many relays that something like that sort of forms, or are you already sort of past the point where that's a concern in your mind?
Well, you know, it's just, so what I was comparing it to the previous thing I was using, which is called ActivityPub and Mastodon, things like that. The issue with those ones is the same issue that the email problem that I mentioned, which is all of your social graph is stored in that one instance on the ActivityPub side. So that if you get banned from an instance, you have to start over. Yeah. So in Nostra, it's not as bad because if you get banned from one relay, it doesn't matter because all your stuff is still backed up everywhere else and you can back it up locally. So yes, in theory, all 10 of those relays could collude and ban you. Let's say they have some messaging, you know, behind the scenes. But in reality, then people would quickly recognize that and just like spin up new relays that don't do that. So it has this like self-healing property that it's much easier to kind of like get around censorship versus in the Mastodon side where you just get banned from an instance and you got to start over and it's really a pain in the ass. So I think that's kind of the main benefit.
Right. So we've been talking a lot about Nostra, but we haven't yet really dug in on the actual, what you're spending most of your time on these days, which is, you know, the client, the app, Domus. So can you talk about, you know, you said, I think 6 months or so that you've been sort of grinding on this thing. What was part of the original motivation? We talked about like sort of the motivation at the protocol level. Does that sort of lend itself towards the motivation on Domus? Did you think, you know, what made you think like, oh, I can go build sort of a better client than I'm seeing out here, or than anyone else is going to build in the next 6 months? Some of the principles you took towards what to actually build, something that sort of looks a bit like Twitter, but obviously has a lot different going on, you know, for all the reasons we talked about. Just how did that get started and how's the progress been today?
Yeah, so the protocol itself was created by someone named Fiat Jaff. It's like a pseudonym. I think he started in 2020. And so it was like 2 years after, you know, after he created this, and there was all the clients that were available were kind of slow and crappy. But I was looking at the protocol and I'm like, there's no reason why these things should be slow. Like this should be really fast. So I didn't really understand why all the clients were just so kind of buggy. So I was like, hey, why don't I just try to, so my, basically, so I created this, I wanted to create a mobile client because there was no mobile clients at the time. So, hey, I had an iPhone at the time. So I was like, hey, let's see if I can actually just make a client, even though I've never made an iOS app before. I'm just like, I want this client on my phone. And I think we can do it much faster. So that was the main reason for building Domus. I just wanted to prove that this protocol is so much more than what these other clients were kind of. Anyway, so yeah, I just been tinkering on it, like in my spare time on weekends, whenever I had the times. It wasn't like full-time dev or anything. But just because it was such a simple protocol, it was very easy to get something working very quickly. And that's the thing that kind of blew me away right away. It was like, wow, this thing, it's so simple to build on that I can see any dev just reading this, like one, this is all I did. I read a single markdown document and I was able to build this client that does all these amazing things. I'm like, this is going to be the thing that makes it be adopted like wildfire just because it's so insanely simple. Like there's a lot of other, these like Web3, like, you know, solutions, and they integrate with these like complicated blockchains. Blockchains are very complicated and they, you know, they're slow and they're not really meant for like fast real time, you know, fetching of threads and stuff like that. So I realized like, okay, we're not a blockchain. It's super simple. Anyone can integrate with it. I'm like, these are the ingredients for like a really successful decentralized protocol. So I'm starting to see that now. There's so many clients, there's probably 20 clients or so, and it's kind of just growing like wildfire. So I'm really excited to see where this is going to go next.
And what was the catalyst for this? We talked a little bit about like the, you know, Jack donation earlier. Was that sort of the critical moment in time, or was there something going on before that was brewing? Because it sounds like, I mean, even I didn't actually download Domus until, I don't know, maybe a week or two after, I think, the Jack donation, sometime around Christmas, so just a couple of weeks ago. And I think it was that same day that I started on it. You put out a post saying that like basically the test flight was full. I think you guys reached 10,000 users that day. And so now you're grinding towards getting it out in the App Store. But what were sort of some of the pivotal milestones thus far? And what do you think is like next to come?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty slow. It wasn't, it was just kind of like all these weird nerds are just tinkering with the protocol. It wasn't like, you know, we did this event in November called Nostra November, which was just like maybe like six of us just posting on Nostra and not Twitter. I think I got through like halfway through the month and I gave up. I was because like, oh, I want to go back to Twitter. But I still love Twitter. Like it's a great client. I just wish they would like integrate with Nostra. But yeah, it's always been very slow until the Jack thing. The Jack thing just kind of blew everything up. It kind of ever since he said that, like that 5,000. Anyway, yeah, it's just been crazy. Like ever since he did that, you know, I had a call with Jack and he's an awesome dude. And he just wants these protocols to win. And it's cool to see him support it. So
how can, you mentioned like Twitter should just integrate with Nostra. How would that actually work? Like, is that a feasible future that you think is possible?
I semi-jokingly say that, but I truly believe that a large social network could integrate with it because it's a relatively simple protocol. And you know, to build a relay for the Twitter side, the way that it would work is like they would simply just spin up like a Twitter relay, and then a Domus client could connect to it, and then, you know, there's no reason why it couldn't pull threads the same way that, you know, the Twitter client does it. So in theory, I believe they could probably do it, and I think that'd be really cool. I doubt they'll ever do it, but there's other social networks that have already done it. So it's like minds.com is one example, and they have a relay, and you know, it's an insane relay. You connect to it and it's like a fire hose of like crazy events and stuff, but you can do it. And so it's cool to see that we're already starting to see a little bit of interoperability and adoption on this thing. So
yeah, it's interesting. I know, you know, a lot of these big players are probably gonna be hesitant to touch anything new and upcoming and disrupt their own business models and things like this, but yeah, the possibility, the fact that the possibility even exists is kind of interesting. I think
Yeah, I mean, I haven't really mentioned this, but you know, we're focusing on the social media use case, but in reality, this is a much more general protocol. So you could use it for, you know, a blogging platform, or like you could build an app on top of it that just uses it as like the data storage layer. It's very much like a Firebase type. I don't know if any people know about Fire. I don't know what the technical level of this audience is, but it's like a real time database that you can build applications on, and social media is just one. Just one use case. There's other things you could build on it. So and what's cool is that once you build on it, all these apps are in theory interoperable. So I could do a tweet and it might show up in like a note-taking app. I don't know why you'd want that, but I'm just saying, it's like, you know, the interoperability that is enabled when you build on top of Nostra is really fascinating, and it's not even really been explored yet. So
Are there particular, you mentioned like a blog. I've seen like there's, I think, early versions of, more of like a Telegram or WhatsApp type of thing. There's, I think, a game or two, maybe more people are building on Nostra. The social media thing makes sense for the censorship issue that we've talked about. Are there other sort of categories that you think are most interesting or that would be, from an interoperability perspective, intriguing along with the social media stuff? Or are you sort of just heads down right now on, social media and Domus?
So I think so it's interesting. So we built this thing where you can connect to multiple relays, and mainly it was for the original reason was for censorship resistance, but it also enables this other use case, which, imagine if you connect to a private relay that's maybe run by your company, and in that case you only need to connect to one relay, but now you have a private Slack that you can use, the Domus app to connect to and chat in or like a Telegram like client where you can connect to and basically run your own Slack node within your company, which I think that's a kind of an interesting use case. And then it, since and so the, let's say you just connect to that one relay, but then you can connect to another relay that's run by another company. Now you're connecting to that company's Slack. So even though originally it was meant for censorship resistance, this multiple relays, in reality, it just allows for actually a really flexible way to connect to multiple servers that are holding text data and stuff. So I don't know. No one's actually doing this yet, but I think those types of use cases might be really interesting in the future.
Well, and one of the cool things I've seen so far on actually on Domus itself is people are sending payments, basically like micro payments or buying each other coffees and things like this. I don't know how that sort of stuff gets started and becomes like a thing, but people are doing it. And there's like you can invoice people basically. How do those integrations work with Lightning Network? Are you seeing like is this something different than you've seen elsewhere? I haven't been nearly as involved with Lightning and whatnot. So how is this, potentially going to change the way that things are working on the Bitcoin and Lightning side of things?
Yeah, so like at being a like being a big Lightning person and being involved in working on the protocol, it just seemed like a natural thing to do to put Lightning into a social network. And I think it's just seeing how people are interacting with Lightning on Domus and on Nostra, it was a big light bulb moment for me, because I realized, okay, we're hooking in peer-to-peer instant payments, tipping, in this like decentralized network. The network effects of that are potentially like insane to think about. So imagine if like you have hundreds of thousands of people eventually on this network who are loading up their wallets in their app and tipping people. And like what would that I think that's going to drive like even just like Bitcoin and Lightning adoption. So as a Bitcoiner, that's makes me happy. So just being able to integrate with Lightning as tightly as possible has always been a goal of Domus. So the way that it works right now is all you do is that you just post a Lightning invoice, which is just a piece of text. You paste it in a post, and then Domus will parse it and put a little payment widget you just press on. So things like that, I really want to do more of within the app, just to make it easier for people to interact with this protocol. Because in reality, people don't really want to, they don't care on how these underlying things work. They just want an easy way to interact with them. So if Domus is able to do that and make it easier for people to interact with the Lightning Network, that's really cool.
Right. And then another cool thing I'm seeing going on is people are actually sort of like funding you in real time to to do what you're doing and to build Domus and everything like that. I think you have like $100 million Satoshi goal on your like on your website, and you're maybe 15 or 20% of the way there. So people are sending, thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin at this point. And so the goal is basically like a full Bitcoin. But how are you actually, it's nice to have like a constant stream of donations, and most of them I think at this point are small, but they do add up. But how do you think about overall, like, are you full time on this at this point? If you're not, do you want to be? How do you sort of raise enough funding to that? Do you just run extremely lean and these donations are enough, or do you raise money? I saw the tweet about turning down people with who aren't offering Bitcoin only, basically. In terms of like VCs and stuff like this. So how do you think about actually sort of making this, leveling it up a bit and going, full time and trying to blow it out the best you can?
Yeah, well, luckily I've been getting lots of help from the community. It's an open source project, so I probably have like 20 people who are just helping me in real time. So in terms of like that side of things, I'm covered. And also Jack was very generous and was able to donate a decent chunk of money directly to me to work on it. So just the amount of support that I've been getting just from the community, and also, yeah, just people tipping me in real time. Like you said, just the past 5 days, people tipped me $5,000 or like $4,000 on the Lightning Network, just streaming tips to my node. It's just like a node that I run at my house. And it's just mind-blowing to me that this is even possible. I'm running a Bitcoin node at my house and a Lightning node, and people are just streaming from around the world. People are just streaming sats to me just to fund because they want this to become a reality. And maybe that's like a new type of funding model. I've never really been a big believer in tipping for sustainable long-term stuff, but maybe if there's like a lot of people in the Lightning Network, that could actually, in theory, become a good way to, fund a developer in the future, maybe instead of having to raise a lot of money. But yeah, I do eventually want to grow this out, and I have a lot of EC meetings. There's a long list of people who I still have to talk to, just because a lot of people want to invest right now. But I don't really have like a co-founder right now, so I have to think about that. But yeah, I whatever right now my main focus is just making this app as awesome as possible, just and keeping people happy, and just to see where this goes. And who knows? Like, I don't know. I would love this to be a bigger thing, and we're definitely getting there. It's been crazy, so.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It's really cool to watch. And we were talking a little bit before we started the recording, but I'm just like sort of in awe of anyone building anything to do with like social, because you have to, on the one hand, like be heads down working, and then on the other, be like heads up, like engaging. And I see you on like all the time, always messaging people and stuff like that. I'm like, this guy's got to carve out time to be like heads down coding and everything. So it's just a super hard balance. Have you been able to sort of get your arms around it ever since things went crazy with adoption sort of overnight?
Yeah, that is, it's true what you say. It's like it's insanely hard to work on a social network and work on a client for a social network when like you're working on the app and then people are asking you questions and you feel the need to answer everyone's questions because it's like you want to help people. And so I'm still trying to find a balance, but it's very difficult. I find like I've been just like applying pull requests and I'll just like answer people's questions, and then while I'm applying pull requests and testing and stuff. So I'm lucky that I'm getting enough people working on the client that I'm not doing a lot of like direct coding right at this time, but maybe once the pull requests slow down, I can probably have to put my heads down a bit more and start coding again.
What's it like? I'm curious, both in terms of like this team of like maybe 20 or so people around the world, presumably that are all chipping in. And then on the other side of things with I think Fiat Jaffe, however you pronounce it, the pseudonymous or anonymous founder of or creator of Nostra. How do you sort of communicate up and down? Or, I presume like you're having some conversations with Fiat Jaffe in terms of what's going on with the protocol and what you're building on the Damas side, and then managing or helping to at least sort of organize to some degree this decentralized group of developers. It's like sort of a very new, there's a certain way that like companies and corporations have been built over the years, and it's been sort of, simplified and worked down to a science, whatever you want to call it. It's very, it's time tested. All of this sort of new ways of organizing, whether it's something that we're talking about here or people talk about DAOs and whatnot, like there are all these different sort of ways of organizing now. What has your experience been in this sort of position, both, above and below you, not above, but, with Fiat Jaffe at the protocol level and then all the people helping out around the world? How has that differed from like your traditional experience working in more traditional structures?
Yeah, it's definitely not hierarchical in any means. It's very decentralized. It's an open source project. The protocol itself is just a bunch of markdown documents and loosely, like, there's a bunch of a few people building clients, but they're all pretty much independent, which has been really, really cool to see, because I'll find that someone in a client in another client, they'll implement a cool feature, and I'm like, ooh, I want to implement that. So the competition between clients has been really fascinating, and I've been getting this a lot of thought. And I realize this is what's lacking in a lot of these centralized platforms is like, since they control the data, they don't really have to compete with other clients or compete with other user experiences on the same like social data, right? So imagine, okay, we have this social network where people are sending messages back and forth, but now we have clients that can compete for user experiences, so get more people into their clients. And so what's going to happen is, these clients are going to get better and better faster than any other any other client that a centralized client could provide. So I think that's a really fascinating, like, free market aspect of what's happening on this protocol, in the same sense of like an email client could try to provide features that another email client might not have, right? So you have that similar competition on Ostra. So that might make some really cool clients that we haven't seen before. So
yeah, it's interesting. The competition in and of itself, obviously not welcome for companies, but great for customers, just tends to make products even better across the board and things like this. And obviously people can choose, you know, if there's no dominant Twitter or Facebook or whatever it might be, choose between what you want and what you like. And that can sort of drive the roadmaps of the leaders and things like this. All right. So, and then you mentioned, you know, we talked about, I don't know if it was actually different or the same, the 14 BTC donation that was public. I don't know if there's another separate one that you got personally or whatever, but I think you're working with Fiat Joff, correct me if I'm wrong, on sort of like helping, you know, allocate the donation that was public. How do you think about, you know, doing that? It sort of lends itself towards the same question of like managing this decentralized workforce or working alongside collaborating this decentralized workforce. What are the thoughts around like sort of the best ways to allocate that money in these early days?
So Fiat Jeff originally got the 14, and it was just probably too much for him to manage all by himself, and he felt like that was too much pressure. So he sent me half of it. So now, you know, we're both mostly independent in terms of how we want to spend it. But in reality, we're still in the same group chats, and we're still trying to figure out what's the best way to fund people who are working on stuff. My personal approach is I'm collecting a list every time someone who's like contributing something really substantial to any project on Nostra, I'm asking them for their Bitcoin address, and I'm writing it down. And, you know, the people who are contributing the most in across, you know, all the clients, even if they're competing with my client, we're going to be rewarding those people, and people who stick around for a while and not just like come in just and leave. So that's the way I'm approaching it. And I just feel like that's makes the most sense, because like a meritocracy type thing, right, where people should be rewarded for putting in the work. So that's been my approach. And then, so I'm going to do another round. I gave one Bitcoin to Fiat Jeff just like as a reward, just because like as a thank you. And I send out a bunch of the thank you rewards. So we send about 5 million sats to like 10 of the core devs. But I'm now building, I probably have a list of like 10 more people who I'm going to send another 5 million sats each, just reward them for all the work they've been putting in since then, working on clients, working on contributions to clients and things like that. So.
Yeah, it's a lot to handle, and it's uncharted territory. So I definitely sort of admire that you're taking it up to task. And it's, you know, like you mentioned, I sort of asked you to describe the whole thing very fundamentally, and you started with the motivations, which I think is very telling. Like most people, you ask them how their product works, they don't really start with the motivations, right? This is obviously like a very ideological thing. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people who agree and disagree across the board, especially like people who are Bitcoin only versus people who aren't and whatnot. But I think there's actually a good amount in common between even these groups that can get a little tribal on Twitter. And I think, you know, it's great to see people sort of building things that they care about for more reasons than just, you know, money. Not that there's anything wrong with money and everything, but yeah, there's real reasons behind it. So it's cool to see.
Yeah, and what's cool about this project, it's not a Bitcoin project, right? So it's because there's no Bitcoin built into it. There's a lot of Bitcoiners in the protocol right now, just because it's like, you know, it's created by Fiat Jeff, who made a lot of Bitcoin related specs and stuff. But this network is open to anyone. So there's like, you know, there's people, Ethereum people on it, there's Bitcoin people on it. And I totally imagine the future where there's, you know, if you want an Ethereum like experience with NFTs and all this stuff within an app, there's no reason why you couldn't build that on Nostra. And you can have your own clients for that. Like, you know, I think Farcaster is kind of doing something similar to that right now. That's kind of like the Ethereum version of that. It's not Nostra, but it's like they're doing their own thing. But there's no reason why we couldn't all interoperate on this protocol. So,
yeah, it's interesting. I'm excited to just sort of see it all play out. And I've never experimented with more like social apps than I have in the last like 6 months or so, just because it seems like there's new stuff coming up that's, I don't know why exactly, but it's just more intriguing to me now than it has been previously. I try to stay off things just because I can't seem to manage my attention with too many of them up at the same time. But anyway, I guess the last question, because I know we're coming up on time. Fast forward, you know, I don't know, a year from now, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, whatever sort of time horizon is most interesting for you to talk about. What's, you know, best case scenario or bull case? What do you see for the future of Nostra and Domus?
Yeah, maybe if this thing keeps growing, we start to see it more widely adopted into other apps and, other products and, different services. Like it could be integrated into a lot of, customer service stuff, like more and more. Who knows? Like this could just keep growing to the point where it's used in everything. Like that would be the obviously the most ultimate bull case. The bear case for this would be, oh, we find some like scaling issues or the spam gets too bad on the network, and then this thing just doesn't work in practice, and then everyone goes back to doing something else. Like I don't know. It's entirely both things are entirely possible. So yeah, my focus right now is like, hey, let's just try to make this thing work in so that it can be built out to a larger scale. But yeah, it's really uncertain right now. Who knows where this is going to go?
Very cool. Well, anyway, I appreciate you taking the time, and it's been a lot of fun playing around with this stuff, and now getting to talk to you and learn more about it from one of the main people behind it. It's really cool. And hopefully people listening as well, if they haven't tried it yet, they'll go. And I guess they can't quite download it yet right now because the test flight got loaded, and they have to wait for the app store. Is that right?
Yeah, in terms of my client, you it's I can open up slots as they come, but it's like they keep filling up because people keep trying to use it. But you can still try the protocol and you can interact with people on Domus by going to like astral.ninja or snort.social. Or there's a bunch of other web clients that you can check out. And if you just go to nostra-protocol/nostra, I think, and there's some links to our Telegram. You can join the Telegram and ask questions, like and we'll get you started. So
Cool. And anywhere else you would point people, like, follow you on Twitter or anything like that, where they can sort of just keep in touch with, latest what's going on at both the protocol level and with Domus.
yeah, I'm more active on Nostra these days, so you'll probably see me just chatting. There's like global feeds, and you can see me chatting in Nostra. I'm not gonna say my pug key because it's very long, but on Twitter, I'm JB55. I sometimes post there. Trying to do less Twitter over time, but yeah, my website's JB55.com. I can support my work. It's all just kind of like it's powered by donations right now. But yeah.